Tantor Audio presents The Fairy War by Rachel Morgan. Narrated by Georgina Marie and Zach Villa. Part 1. Violet. Chapter 1. The forest is dead. Heavy silence waits the air. No movement stirs beneath the blackened leaves and twigs that litter the ground. The trees left standing are naked. Even the sunlight filtering through skeletal branches is dull and weak. I wish I could remember what it looked like before. A month has passed since the destruction, but Creepy Hollow Forest shows no sign of healing itself. Everyone says it's because the fire wasn't natural. It was driven by magic. The kind of magic that knows nothing but devastation. I take a step forward, my boot raising a small cloud of ash from the debris. I'm not here to lament the ruin of Creepy Hollow. I didn't even know the name of this place until someone told me. I'm here in the hopes that I'll see something to trigger a memory. Any memory. Anything that might tell me who I am or what happened to make me forget everything. I continue moving forward, aware of the footsteps behind me. My companion won't let me wander far from his sight. In the distance, I see some sort of mound. A mound that looks like more than torn branches and crippled bushes. As I get closer, I realize what I'm looking at. This mound of splintered furniture and broken belongings was once a home. An entire home concealed inside a tree. Powerful magic kept it hidden, until a fire more powerful swept through and shattered the spells keeping the home intact. A hand touches my arm. "This is as far as we go," my companion says. I pull my arm away and turn to face the brooding young man at my side. Like all Reptisillas, Jamon's eyes are black, and his body is covered in fine blue-green scales that shimmer where the light touches them. His hair, dark as midnight, brushes his shoulders. But I haven't seen anything I remember yet. We haven't gone far enough.
"Doesn't matter,"
he says, revealing incisors, like small knives.
"I don't trust you."
"I'm not taking you any closer to the guild. Jamon was the first to try and kill me after I woke up underground in Farrah's home. He wasn't the last. Reptisillas don't look too kindly upon guardians, and apparently, that's what I am. It seems a little unfair to hate me for being something I don't remember, but Jamon didn't see it that way. 10 minutes after I woke up and realized I couldn't remember a thing about myself, he walked into the room, took one look at the strange markings on my wrists, and tried to crack my head open with a candlestick. Fortunately, Farrah stepped in before he could do any damage. I fold my arms across my chest. "Don't you get it yet? I'm not some brainwashed fairy desperate to do Draven's bidding. I'm not about to run off and tell him everything I know about the local Reptisilla community." Jamon tilts his head to the side and watches me closely.
"Every other fairy who survived is brainwashed. Why should I believe you're any different?"
I step closer to him, making sure to get right in his face.
"Do I look brainwashed, idiot?"
His eyes dart down. I follow his gaze and see purple sparks jump from my clenched fists and disappear into the air. I raise my eyes and meet his. He doesn't step away from me.
"There's no need to lose your temper, Violet. You know I'm only looking out for the safety of my people."
"And why would Draven give an ogre's ass about finding you guys?"
He won't stop until he has control over every race. That includes us.
And I won't stop until I get my memories back. I glare at him until it becomes clear he won't back down. I take a deep breath and raise my eyes to the sky. I stare at wisps of gray cloud between the naked branches. Maybe if I'm honest about how lost and confused I feel, Jamin will lighten up a little. You don't know what it's like, I say softly, looking back at your life and seeing nothing but a gaping hole and a few pieces of random, unimportant information.
No, I don't know what it's like. I also don't know what it's like to trust a guardian.
He wraps his fingers around my upper arm.
Which is why we're leaving. Now.
Great. Attempting to open up to him was obviously a stupid idea. Back to the angry, argumentative Violet. I'm fine with that. Hiding my true feelings seems to come more easily to me anyway.
Jamin attempts to direct me back the way we came, but instead of going with him,
I grab onto a low branch with my free hand and refuse to move.
Stop it, I say.
Stop treating me like a criminal. I can walk without your assistance, so stop pushing me around. He slowly releases his fingers.
Fine, but if you make a single move to...
I'm not going to...
Get down,
he hisses, pulling me to the ground before I have a chance to argue.
Something moved.
With our shoulders pressed together and our backs against the tree, we listen. After almost a minute of silence, I begin to wonder if Jamin lied. But then I hear something. Footsteps moving closer. More than one pair.
The sensor was set off somewhere near here,
a man's voice says.
Somewhere near here?
A woman repeats, frustration evident in her voice.
Can you be a little more specific than that?
No, I can't remember exactly where the sensor is. Everything looks the same out here now.
I look down at the hand I wrapped around the tree branch. Black soot marks my palm. I rub my hand slowly against my pants, wiping it clean as I listen.
We can't return with nothing, the woman says. Only unmarked Fae set the alarm off. That means a potential threat to Lord Draven.
I know,
the man growls.
Jamin makes a similar sound. I can guess what he's thinking. Something about it being my fault we're in danger. Of course, if he'd consider letting me out of his sight for a few seconds, we could easily escape this situation. He could use his reptilian magic to vanish in less time than it takes to snap a twig in half, and I could open a fairy path at my feet and drop into it. If only Jamin hadn't confiscated my stylus. The footsteps grow louder as the man and woman approach the tree we're hiding behind. Jamin places his hand over mine and whispers,
"Don't move."
Without warning, my clothes begin to change color. My boots and pants blend in with the leaves and dirt. My sleeveless top takes on the color and texture of the rough tree bark I'm leaning against. The camouflage spreads up my body and along my arms. The same thing happens to Jamin. By the time the uniformed man and woman come into view, we're practically transparent. Not exactly. I can see the outline of our bodies if I look carefully, but close enough. The two fairies wear dark blue uniforms with a shape I can't see properly stitched to the top of their right sleeves. They scan their surroundings as they walk, barely pausing when their eyes brush over the area we're sitting in. They look up, around, behind, but never back at us. We're invisible to them.
Remain still,
Jamin whispers. It seems to take an excruciatingly long time before Draven's guards are out of sight, heading toward where the guild is supposed to be. When Jamin eventually lifts his hand off mine, the camouflage vanishes.
Let's get out of here quickly,
he says. He pulls me to my feet, then releases my arm. At least he's learned he doesn't need to drag me along. I run beside him. Camouflage magic, I say as my arms pump back and forth. That's pretty cool. Can all reptacillas do that?
Yes.
He throws a quick look over his shoulder, then faces forward and ignores me. Fine. I can do the silence thing. We run for at least half an hour. Jamon breathes as easily as if we were walking, but the sounds coming from my mouth start to sound more like gasps. My lack of fitness is a state I attribute to being coped up below ground for a month. I've traveled around the tunnels with Farah, of course, but Jamon wouldn't let me above ground until today. He slows suddenly, and I almost run right past him. I recognize this spot. It's where he took the blindfold off me earlier, and I saw the sun for the first time in weeks. I felt so stupid stumbling around the underground tunnels with that smelly cloth tied around my head. There were definitely people laughing at me before we managed to get above ground. With any luck, Jamon won't bother covering my eyes for the return trip.
"Time for your blindfold," he says.
No such luck. Come on! Seriously? This is ridiculous, Jamon. I'm not going to tell anyone where you live.
Stop arguing with me.
He pulls the offending rag from his pocket. He takes hold of my arm and tries to pull me forward. Again. And that's when I finally lose my temper. I am so sick of this. I rip my arm out of his grasp. I'm the one who's been wronged here. Someone stole my memories from me and left me out in the forest to die, and yet every single day I have to deal with you looking at me as though everything bad that's ever happened in your life is my fault.
Violet, don't be so...
No! My hands shoot forward and push hard against his chest. I have never lied to you. Both you and your father have interrogated me, and I've never told you anything but the truth. If you hate me simply for being who I am, then let me leave. Otherwise, start treating me with some kind of decency. Red ripples flash across Jamon's scaled skin.
A guardian doesn't deserve decency,
he snarls.
You think you're better than everyone else. You do whatever the hell you want. Well, not anymore.
He pushes me as hard as I pushed him, and I almost fall over.
Now you're under my watch, and I get to show you exactly what I think of. Shut up!
Without pausing to think, almost as if it's instinct, I kick him as hard as I can. Before I can bring my leg back, he grabs it and pulls me down with him. I hit the ground, jab my elbow into his stomach, then roll over and spring up into a crouching position. It all happens so fluidly that I'm not entirely sure how I do it. I don't have time to wonder, though, because Jamon throws himself at me. I duck out of the way and tumble across the ground. Branches scratch my arms. The smell of ash fills my nostrils.
I jump to my feet just as Jamon slams me against a tree.
With both hands, he pins my arms to my sides.
This is why you got me to come out here with you,
he says.
So you could attack me.
Ridiculous, I gasp as I bring my knee up to strike somewhere in the region of his stomach, possibly a little lower. He groans, but doesn't let go of me, so I do it again. His grip loosens. I push him away, then bring my fist up to meet his chin. His head snaps back. I spin him around, lock one arm around his shoulders, and I seem to be holding a knife to his neck, a knife I wasn't in possession of a moment ago, a knife that glitters and sparkles as if made of 1,000 tiny gold stars. In fright, I step back, open my fingers, and the knife vanishes. I... Jamon turns on me, and I raise my hands and surrender. I'm sorry. I take another step back. I didn't mean for all that to happen. I didn't even know I could fight like that. And where the freak did that knife come from? Jamon stares at me like I'm stupid.
Hello, you're a guardian. Where do you think it came from?
I stare back at him, my mouth hanging open before I manage to say, I don't know. Can all guardians do that? He shakes his head as he walks toward me.
You really are messed up.
I stand still as he places the blindfold over my eyes and ties it at the back of my head. A piece of hair catches in the knot as he tugs it tight, but I can't focus enough on the pain to be bothered by it. My brain seems to be stuck on repeat with the words, "What just happened?" playing over and over again.
Are you going to attack me for touching your arm? Jaman asks. Because walking is going to be very difficult for you if I can't guide you.
I shake my head. He'd probably enjoy watching me stumble around, but I won't give him the pleasure. He grasps my upper arm and steers me forward. I can feel his scales against my skin. They're kind of slippery. It doesn't really creep me out, but I still wish I'd put my jacket on. I don't like him touching me, invading my space.
Mind the tree, he snaps.
I move my hands through the air and feel the rough texture of bark beside me. Another step forward brings my knees up against something hard. I climb over the enormous root, thinking what a giant this tree must be.
The entrance is in front of you.
I slide my foot forward, feeling for the edge of the hole. Based on my journey out of the tunnels earlier today, I know I'm about to head down a steep passage of narrow stairs cut into the earth. Not the easiest thing to negotiate while blindfolded.
Stop right there.
I hesitate. That wasn't Jaman's voice. In fact, it sounded like a hand strikes my back. I cry out as I tumble forward. I claw at the tunnel walls, but I'm moving too fast to stop my fall. I hit the ground on my side but can't stop the momentum from carrying me down the stairway, knocking air out of my lungs with every step I...
Stop!
I yell, throwing a hand out and releasing magic. I slam into the invisible shield, which, fortunately, doesn't hurt the way slamming into the ground does. I tear the blindfold off my eyes and push myself up onto my feet. My pummeled body screams at me. Somewhere above me, I hear shouting. Without hesitation, I dash up the steps. Tiny glow bugs wiggling along the tunnel's walls light the way. Looking up, I see the entrance ahead of me, a circular shape of light. I take the last few steps, two at a time, slip just before I reach the top, and land on my knees and elbows.
Digging my fingers into the dirt, I pull myself up the rest of the way and peek out the top of the tunnel.
Over the tree's giant roots, I see orange sparks spinning and swerving, and black leaves rushing into a swirl in the air. I climb out the tunnel and crouch behind a root so I can see what's going on. One of Draven's guards, the male fairy we hid from earlier, tosses a handful of leaves at Jaman. The leaves turn into bats that screech and flap as they swarm around him. He ducks, drops to the ground, and strikes at the guard's legs with a fallen branch. The guard jumps out of the way as he sends more magic in Jaman's direction. A flame runs up Jaman's arm, and he cries out in pain. The guard advances on him. I stand. Automatically, I lift my arms. Before I have time to consider what I'm doing, a bow and arrow as golden and sparkling as the vanishing knife appear in my hands. I jump onto the root I was hiding behind, aim at the guard, and let the arrow fly. It zooms through the air and pierces his chest where his heart is, exactly where I intended it to go. Shocked, the guard looks up at me. Orange eyes, hot and furious like a raging fire, meet mine. For a second, I'm certain he's going to rip the arrow right out of his heart and kill me with it. Instead, I see Jaman rising up behind the guard, a log grasped between his hands. He swings forward hard. The log connects with the guard's head with a loud crack. The guard slumps to the ground, motionless.
Chapter 2. Jaman's eyes move from the arrow in the guard's chest up to my face.
You shot him.
I shot him. I uncurl my fingers from the sparkling bow and it disappears. Of course, I say, sounding a lot calmer than I feel. What was I supposed to do? Let him kill you? Jaman frowns.
I could have taken him out on my own. I doubt it. Before I shot him, it looked like he was about to take you out.
Jamon eyes the fallen fairy.
Is he dead? I know it's supposed to be difficult to kill your kind.
His words trouble me, but I try not to show it. If you leave the arrow in, the magic will eventually fade from his body and he'll die. But if you remove it within the next hour or so, his magic will heal his heart and he'll be fine.
How do I know that? I ask myself.
I just do, it seems. It's general knowledge, like knowing the sky is blue and that fairies live for centuries.
Jamon narrows his eyes at me.
Did you mean to kill him?
Of course not. What do you think I am, a cold-blooded killer?
Jamon raises an eyebrow.
Well?
I'm not a killer. What I don't say is that I'm more than a little disturbed that I just shot someone in the heart. The only thing keeping me from freaking out is the knowledge that if we act quickly, the guard won't die. I walk over to him and lift his legs.
I'm also not stupid, I tell Jamon. If we get the arrow out of the sky quickly, he'll survive. Then you'll have one of Draven's men as your prisoner, and you can ask him whatever you want.
Jamon stares at me.
What are you waiting for? I ask. Are you going to help me carry him, or should I push him down the stairs like you pushed me?
At the bottom of the steep stairway, one of the Reptisilian guards takes over from me and helps Jamon carry Draven's ferry to wherever prisoners are kept. I'm left to wander through the tunnels back to Farah's home. The home that's been mine for the past month. Jamon doesn't mind letting me out of his sight down here. He knows the numerous guards on duty at the bottom of the stairway would never let me out. And if I continued along one of the tunnels in hopes of finding another exit, I'd probably run into some other guardian-hating creature before I found a way out from underground. Underground. It surprises me that there are things I remember about this place. I remember that it's a network of tunnels, dangerous because many of the Fae who reside down here aren't the friendly type. There are various hidden entrances and many different communities. Some mix, while others keep to themselves. I also remember that I've been here before. My memories of exactly what I did down here are absent, but I do remember flashing colored lights and hazy rooms of dancing fae. Interesting. I can't imagine myself as the partying type. But maybe I am. I walk along the edge of one of the wide tunnels, trailing my hand along the sandy wall. After almost winding up flattened like a fairy pancake, I learned that wagons and other transportation devices can travel down these tunnels at remarkable speeds. It's best to stay out of the way at all times. Fat glowbugs of the bright white variety are stuck to the ceiling at regular intervals, ensuring that no matter where anyone chooses to wander, their path will always be lit. The smell of wet earth fills my nostrils, mingling with a hint of spices and incense. I hear laughter behind me as three Reptisilian children run past, a boy dragging a toy cart behind him, chased by another two boys. They disappear around a corner into one of the tunnels with homes along it. I look up as I pass the tunnel and read the sign hanging above the entrance, Slippers Way. I remember that one. Farah has a friend who lives down there. We visited her for tea one afternoon. I pass several other people on my way to Farah's tunnel. They're all Reptisillas, except for the dwarf carrying a lumpy bundle on his head. Most of them ignore me, but two or three glance warily in my direction before crossing to the other side of the tunnel. Only one person smiles as I pass, a girl about my own age with green ribbons tied in her black hair. Netiza, I think her name is. I've seen her with Jamon. It's the only time he ever smiles. Farah's tunnel has a warmth to it that the main tunnel lacks, probably due to the orange glowbugs on the ceiling and the tiny flecks of yellow light glinting inside the paving stones covering the tunnel floor. Baskets of flowers hang here and there between the doors. Flowers that never seem to wilt. There must be different people in charge of different tunnels, because some are so pretty, while others are completely bare. I reach the door to Farrah's home and push it open. "Hello?" I call. No response. She's obviously out. I shut the door behind me and cross the kitchen to the small bedroom that's been mine ever since I woke up in it a month ago. I light the lantern with a flick of my finger. Farrah doesn't believe in using glow bugs, before flopping onto the bed and staring at the ceiling. Like all the walls in this home, the ceiling is covered in a creamy-colored paint that Farrah told me heats up in winter and cools down in summer. And like every other time I've stared at it, my heart starts racing with the impatient need to be out there, figuring out who I am and doing my part to bring Draven down. Every day that passes is more wasted time. I sit up and run a hand through my hair. The note in my front pocket makes a crinkling sound as I cross my legs. I carefully slide it out. I don't want it to get too crumpled, or I won't be able to read the words anymore. Not that it matters, I suppose. I've read it so many times I know every word by heart. I start to open it once more, carefully unfolding the softened edges of the paper, but I'm interrupted by the sound of Farrah's front door opening.
"Grandma, are you here?"
"No, it's just me," I call out to Jamon, sliding the note back into my pocket. I climb off the bed and walk to the kitchen. I don't know where she is. She wasn't here when I got back just now.
"Actually,"
Jamon says as he pushes his hands into his pockets and looks at the floor.
"It's you I wanted to speak to."
"Oh." I lean against the small wooden table in the center of the kitchen and try to figure out why Jamon isn't giving me one of his death stares.
Yeah, I thought about it and figured that Draven's guard probably would have defeated me if you hadn't shot him, so thanks."
"Oh," I say again. "That's unexpected."
"Yeah, well, I know you think I'm an awful person because of the way I've treated you, but I'm not above thanking someone for saving my life, even if I'm still not sure I should be trusting that someone."
I reach for the key around my neck and move it back and forth across its chain. Okay, sure. You're welcome." Jamon finally raises his eyes from the floor and looks at me.
"Anyway, Draven's fairy is locked up now. The arrow has been removed from his chest. As soon as he wakes up, I'm sure my dad will want to interrogate him."
"I'm sure he will, considering Jamon's father is the main leader of the Reptisilin community residing in Creepy Hollow. Well, I hope he learned something useful."
"Yeah. Anyway, I need to go."
Jamon turns toward the door, but before he can reach for the handle, the door swings open and Farrah steps inside, a basket weighing her arm down.
"Jamon," she says in surprise, "why aren't you at the meeting?"
"Meeting?"
"The leader's meeting."
Farrah leaves her basket onto the kitchen table. Her eyes flick to me before returning to her grandson's.
"The one about Violet."
"The one about me?" I feel suddenly sick, as though I'm whooshing through winding tunnels on one of the Reptisilla's high-speed transporters.
"What?"
Jamon's eyebrows are drawn together, and his greenish-blue skin flashes lighter, then darker.
"I thought the meeting was tomorrow."
Farrah lifts her shoulders.
"I suppose you got the days mixed up, dear boy."
"The days mixed? I couldn't. Ugh!"
He rushes out the door, slamming it shut behind him. Farrah chuckles and shakes her head while I reach across the table and pull the basket toward me. I start unpacking the food. "This is the meeting where they decide what to do with me, right?" Farrah nods, pulls out a chair, and sits down with a sigh.
"But I'm sure you have nothing to worry about, Vi. You've been down here long enough for them to see that you aren't a real threat to anyone."
"Right. I wish I could be as sure as Farrah. Does Jamon really need to be there? Didn't you say he isn't a leader yet? I hope the meeting finishes before he gets there. He'd probably try to convince everyone to lock me up right next to the fairy I just helped him capture."
"He'll become a leader in a few months when he turns 20.
Farrah says as she pushes her long gray hair off her shoulder.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?